Today on Beyond the Walls with Jeremy Thomas, we have a small sample of the larger lesson which is coming tomorrow. These lessons are in the Framework series. They are all about taking more detailed, intricate, and complex doctrines and building upon the framework that was established in the Basic series. The intent is to greatly expand your knowledge and appreciation of the intricacy and the beauty of God's holy word.
I have a question, and somebody asked a question about this, so I want to address that question first, and then I want to get into the remaining portion of the booklet. The question is where it asks, where did most of the water come from that flooded the earth? Where did most of the water come from that flooded the earth? Well, I argue that it came from within the earth. When the fountains of the deep burst forth, which is described in Genesis 7:11, it's a little bit later described again, but only a small portion of the water was actually sourced in the clouds above. No model of the atmosphere has been discovered where great amounts of water could be held in Earth's atmosphere without causing a runaway greenhouse effect. The question was, why would a lot of water in the atmosphere cause a runaway greenhouse effect? And so I want to discuss this whole issue a little bit. Okay, water functions like a greenhouse gas in that it will allow heat to enter our atmosphere, but it's more difficult for heat to escape. So if you have a lot of greenhouse gases in our atmosphere, and water being one of them, a lot of water in this case, then what's going to happen is the earth is going to heat up, and it's going to become so hot that human and animal life cannot persist on the earth. So up to this time, creationist meteorologists have not been able to devise a model where you have the earth covered in a canopy, a vapor canopy of water before the flood that would allow people to actually live. Okay, that doesn't mean it's not, God couldn't have supernaturally done it or something like that. It's just that we haven't, through known understanding of principles of biology, physics and so forth, chemistry, been able to form a model that would not result in a runaway greenhouse effect. Now, the reason this has become an issue or a question is because in Genesis chapter 1, verses 6 and 7 and 8, the second day of creation, you have description of this thing called the waters above and the waters below and this firmament. Now, in the 1960s, I'm just going to draw the earth. It's not going to be a very good model, but I'm going to draw the earth. Okay, I'm just going to draw some kind of land mass out here. This is not accurate, okay? But in the 1960s, a guy named Joseph Dillo, commonly known as Jody Dillo, wrote his dissertation at Dallas Theological Seminary on this issue in chapter 1, verses 6, 7, 8, the canopy, these waters above. And he formed this idea that there was a vapor canopy. Okay, so let's just call this water out here. Okay, the green is land. Okay, earth. Okay, and out here, outside of our atmosphere, at the edge of our atmosphere, you had this water canopy or vapor canopy. Now, this was his idea, his model for what Genesis day 2 was describing. And this became the prevailing theory in creationism, that the source of the floodwaters was basically this water vapor that condensed and then fell as rain on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Now, like I said before, meteorologists began to try to work with this model, and they could never figure out how they could create a sustainable environment in here. So this cast doubt on the water vapor canopy theory. Now, Walt Brown, another man who wrote a book, I think, called In the Beginning or something like that, he pointed out another observation. On day 4, the sun, moon, and stars. And the stars and the planetary bodies were designed to help people distinguish seasons and also as signs. Okay, and he pointed out that if there's a vapor canopy out here, and you've got the stars out here, okay, and the planets, whatever, you wouldn't be able to visually see them because of the water vapor canopy would be blocking man's ability to see these. So the purpose of the stars and the planetary bodies would not be functioning if there was actually a vapor canopy here. So that is a good point, too, to illustrate possibly that there was not a water vapor canopy here. Now, another thing that has been projected on the basis of day two is that it's interesting at the end of day two, he doesn't say, and behold, the Lord looked at all he had made, and behold, it was very good. He doesn't say that at the end of day two. And people have said, the reason God doesn't say that at the end of day two is because God knew that these waters out here would be the waters that fell and flooded the earth. Okay. And when you put all these things together, a lot of times people say, well, this is really convincing. Okay. But there's sort of a leak in that argument, because at the end of the 6 days, it says God looked at all that he had made, including the water canopy, and he said, behold, it was very good. So maybe he doesn't say it on day two, but he does say on day six that everything's very good, and that would include day two. So maybe that argument's not as strong as it once seemed to be. Now, so how do we explain what happened on day two? Because all these arguments are designed with the vapor canopy and so forth. And who's the other guy? Carl Ball. He had another argument that he felt like it was ice. It was not a water vapor canopy, but it was an ice canopy. I think he said it was 2 to 3 feet thick, because he's trying to get enough water in there at this distance away from the earth, so when it fell, it would flood the whole world and cover the mountains and so forth. Okay, but all these vapor canopy or ice canopy theories fall short. They all have problems. Okay, now, D. Russell Humphreys came along. I can't remember when he did this research, maybe the 80s or 90s, I don't know. And he was looking at Genesis, and when he looked on the fifth day, he noticed something about the birds and where they are flying, where they were designed to fly. Let me find it real quick. It's verse 20. Genesis 1:20, God said, let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures. That's a fish. We're not concerned about that. Let birds fly above the earth. And it says, in the open expanse of the heavens. But in the Hebrew, it says, on the face of the expanse of the heavens. On the face of it. Okay, so what he pointed out was that there, obviously we know where the birds fly. We look up, they're flying right here in the first heaven above us. That's the face of this expanse, okay? Now, the extent of the expanse, that's the question. Where is the extent of this outer expanse or waters above? Where is that? Well, he posited that it's at the edge of the universe. At the edge of the universe, not around the earth, but at the edge of the universe. I think that's the best view, that it sort of separates the second heavens from the third heaven, where God is. Okay, so that would take the sun, moon, and stars, right? So let's erase these. And it's going to put them inside. It's going to put them inside the canopy. Okay? And the water's on the outside of the canopy. I'm going to get rid of these arrows. Okay? So the birds fly on the face of the right up next to the earth. Then you have the second heavens outside of that, where the sun, moon, and stars and all of that are. And then beyond that, you have the third heaven. So we'll put the throne of God out here. We'll make it purple. Okay. Okay, the throne of God. It's not a very fancy throne, but anyway, you get the idea. Third heaven out here. And the water separating them from the second heaven, which we're in here. And then the first heaven is that right up against the earth, the face of our atmosphere. Okay? So that would then say, of course, that we're not trying to get this water to fall on the earth to account for all the floodwaters, that actually the floodwaters came from within the earth. This is the primary source. And that's why in Genesis 7:11, that is mentioned as the first source, not the rain that came down, but that, if you read the verse, the fountains of the great deep burst forth. That's mentioned first, and then it says the floodgates of the sky were open. And in fact, it can be cause for effect. Cause, fountains of the great deep burst forth, effect, floodgates of the sky are open. So this is, Walt Brown has a theory that the earth like basically split apart and like steam was shooting out because it was under so much pressure that the water was basically boiling with steam. And it shot out these with high propulsion, so high that he's even got comets forming out of this. And that may or may not be, but that would be several hundred miles. It would escape our atmosphere. But and then falling down as torrential rainfall for 40 days and 40 nights. So this is what I'm thinking too, is that the primary source came from the floodgates of the sky. So, I mean, I'm sorry, from the within the earth. Now, how much water do you need to cover the earth? Well, we have enough water on earth right now to cover the whole earth if we do two things. If we take the mountains and we push them down, and we take the sea basins, ocean basins, and we lift them up, which is what I suspect. I suspect that at creation, the waters were not very deep, first of all. The ocean basins were not deep. That all that formed during the flood, the deep, you know, there's a place that's 7 miles deep. We didn't have anything like that. I think that most of, even if you go out today into the oceans, most of the sea life is found close to the shores in shallow water. Because light is penetrating, you can have growth of food, and this is where most of your sea creatures are. Sure, they traverse the great seas and so forth, but there's not, you're not going to go fishing out there. There's not many things living out there. Okay? But before the flood, I think those ocean basins were much more shallow, and you had much more sea life throughout what was then the ocean. Also, the mountains. So they were not nearly as high. So I doubt there was anything more than 1,000 or 2,000 feet max. So if you lower all those mountains and you raise those ocean basins, you could cover it with all the earth water we have on earth now. You could cover it 8,000 feet deep. And all you needed to do was cover the highest mountain by 22.5 feet, which is what the Genesis narrative says, and you'll have a global flood. Okay? So this is what I'm envisioning in my mind just from reading the text, that the mountain building and the ocean base forming all took place during the latter parts of the flood, okay? And that water mainly came from within the earth, okay? But now it's mostly kept safe for us in the ocean basins. Psalm 104 talks about this. It says, the Lord says, the water will go this far and no further. And that's there by the word of the Lord. So when you go to the beach and you see that, you know, that water is stopped right there. It's because the Lord made those ocean basins to contain that water so it wouldn't cover the whole earth again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Beyond the Walls with Jeremy Thomas. If you're interested in learning about the foundational doctrines and themes of the Bible that gave rise to this series, then season one of this podcast is for you on the basics. Additional material can be found on our website at beyondthewalls-ministry.com. If you found this information useful and helpful in your spiritual walk, then please consider rating this podcast in your favorite podcast player. And until next time, we hope you're living by the fruit of the Spirit.